We want to thank y'all for tuning in to Run Up the Numbers.
Every Monday at 8 a.m. And if you miss us in the morning, you can catch the replay in the afternoon at 2 p.m. and again at 8 p.m. You can also check out the shows archived over at thenumbers.fm. And for you early risers, every Monday morning at 6 a.m. on 107.1 X-Ray FM.
And make sure you're following us on all the social media, because we out here. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, House Party, hey. YouTube, Twitch, Black Planet,
let's go.
MySpace, Tinder, and catch us ticking on the talk, hey. And Google Plus.
In this episode, we'll be putting you up on the history behind Black August, and in a segment from the locals interview with Commissioner Joanne Hardesty.
Also, Black Portland organizing its message to the country, and Trump boat float goes awry.
But first, let's jump into mailboxes getting snatched up all around Portland and Eugene. United States Postal Service's Ernie Swanson says that the decline in mail volume is the reason that 4 mailboxes have been removed from Portland and as many as 27 have been removed from Eugene. Even more mailboxes are scheduled to be removed from Portland this week. After a photo of multiple mailboxes being removed in Northeast Portland hit social media, citizens responded with concern. Swanson said the Postal Service is only removing mailboxes from locations that have multiple boxes, and those locations with single boxes remain undisturbed. Boxes are being removed nationwide per a directive from the United States Postal Service headquarters. Many postal workers feel that this is an intentional move to sabotage the agency during an election year. Leading up to the recent special election, postal workers here in Portland advised voters not to wait until the last minute to get ballots in the mail. The president went on record saying that he is intentionally not providing the United States Postal Service with the support needed for vote by mail to operate efficiently for November's election. Despite voting by mail being the safest option for citizens to participate during the pandemic. Dog. Like, this is voter suppression. And you're saying this on camera. After criticizing it, after trying to, you know, strike all this fear in people for trying to do it, saying there's going to be all this fraud. And then you're like, this isn't all, though. Like, they're removing sorting machines.
Yep.
They're destroying them. They're cutting available, what would normally be available, overtime hours. Now y'all removing mailboxes and sealing. I saw a picture of like a red block, like a lock on the mailboxes. For some of the ones they don't move, they just block the place you put mail in.
They put a boot on the box?
They put a boot on the box.
What?
Like I don't, like, how isn't this the only thing people are, it should be COVID and mail. That's the only news that should be existing right now.
Especially when you take into account that they're this year specifically based on COVID and distancing,
right,
and people's immune systems being compromised, not wanting to be standing in lines with hundreds of people.
Right.
This is going to be necessary.
Yep.
And I'm pretty sure these boxes sticking around for another 4 months would have hurt nothing.
Right. Right. And this started with the primaries, with them closing locations. They closed tons of voting locations, and now they're removing mailboxes. Like, what? How is this not a movie? What are we living in right now?
Oh, no, it is a movie.
Oh, to be clear.
Yes. There will be a 2020 movie coming out in the next 10 years.
Wow.
Remember I said it here first, people. Well, Black Portland is organizing against mixed messaging through major media outlets. Portland's social justice movement has seen waves of tension as the Black community and white protesters move through a sea of complex racial issues. Coming in fifth in terms of major cities with the least diversity, Portland is at the end of the day a majority white, which leaves some to ponder, how can white residents support Black rights without making themselves the story? We've seen this happen with various national headline-grabbing stories over the 82 and counting days of protests and rallies around this city. We live in a state that was designed to be a white utopia, and it's truly something remarkable for Portland currently to be at the center of the nation's attention for Black Lives Matter, said Cameron Whitten, founder of the Black Resilience Fund, which has raised $1.5 million this summer to invest in the Black community. I could disagree with how they're doing it, but in the end, they're putting their bodies on the line to protect me, and that's huge compared to what we're used to. While many Black residents have embraced the enthusiasm, the white crowds make retaining ownership of the movement critical. That's led to disagreements in the Black community about what it means to be a white ally. It's a perfect storm with everything that's been happening. And to add to that attention of the world being on Portland, Oregon right now, we have a unique space, says Sam Thompson, who founded the group Black Men and Women United last month to push the movement towards long-term Black resilience. If those people weren't there and they weren't protesting to the level they are now, we wouldn't be having this conversation 2.5 months later, he said. As white people see the protests, when the person that looks like you is breaking the windows and starting the fire, you deal with that a lot differently than when it's someone who doesn't look like you. Sam Thompson's group, Black Men and Women United, have been meeting every Wednesday evening to discuss ways to unify the message of the Black community as a whole, which includes members of the community who are specialists in the fields of the six pillars in which the group operates under. Those six pillars are economics, education, politics, community policing / safety, healthcare, and media. If you want to learn more, you can check out the Facebook group Black Men and Women United. And if you tune into the numbers, we'll be dropping audio segments from these meetings weekly. So tune in.
Man, I can't wait for that. That interview we captured, that conversation we captured last week was incredible.
Yes.
I can't wait for the audience to hear it. Like, seriously. And, you know, everyone getting on the same page with the messaging is really, really important. It really important. Is, especially, you know, in a place like Portland where, you know, there aren't that many Black people. And yes, we are kind of like, you know, the epicenter for the protests right now. I just think it's important. And I agree with Cameron's stance. It is important that we recognize that there are white bodies putting themselves on the line.
Yes.
Which is what we've actually been asking for decades. Yes. We've literally been asking for white people to take it seriously. And now that they're taking this seriously, it seems like some of us are confused about what it's looking like.
Yes.
I don't want to be on the front lines because this isn't a conversation between me and other white people. This is a conversation for white people to other white people. Like, this is y'all conversation. So y'all need to talk to each other about this.
Yes.
So you'll maybe seeing images of, you know, elderly white people being mistreated by the police. Maybe that'll, you know, have people take things a little bit more serious. Like, yeah, the cops are out of hand. We've been saying that for a while now, guys.
And we're going to keep saying it until it stops.
Yeah, we have to. Yo, so did you know about Black August? Because I didn't 0%. Know about Black August. I just found out about Black August. So let's get into Black August. A celebration born in the 70s as a call for reflection, study, and action to promote Black liberation serves as a call to honor political prisoners, martyrs, and freedom fighters of the Black freedom struggle. And to be clear, no, it's not a second Black History Month. In a statement to CNN, Monifa Bandele said, "During Black August, we honor Black freedom fighters, many of whom were killed by the state or imprisoned for defending Black lives. This month is a time to reflect and learn about the legacies of Black revolutionaries, while we rededicate ourselves to the protracted struggles against white supremacy, colonialism, capitalism, and imperialism. We study, plan, and pledge to continue the work and fight for Black liberation." The tradition originated in California's prisons after the deaths of George and Jonathan Jackson, as well as other incarcerated brothers seeking freedom. George Jackson, an activist, died at a California prison on August 21st, 1971. He received 1 year to life in prison in 1960 for allegedly stealing $70 from a Los Angeles gas station, according to a 1970 book review from the New York Times. During his time behind bars, Jackson began studying the ideas of Karl Marx and Vladimir Lenin, wrote Eric Cummings, in The Rise and Fall of California's Radical Prisons Movement. He is considered one of the most outspoken voices on racism in the criminal justice system at the time. About 1,500 mourners give the Black Panther salute as the body of Soledad brother, George Jackson, was carried from St. Augustine's Episcopal Church in Oakland, California in 1971. In letters to his parents, his younger brother, Jonathan, activist Angela Davis, and others articulated their frustration and rage over systemic racism and his imprisonment. The letters were ultimately published as a collection titled Soledad Brother, The Prison Letters of George Jackson. In 1970, Jackson and two other incarcerated Black men were charged with the murder of a white prison guard. That same year, Jackson's brother Jonathan was killed in a shootout with police outside the Marin County Courthouse after taking the judge hostage to try and secure his brother's release. The Los Angeles Times reported this in 2015. On August 21, 1971, George Jackson, who was incarcerated at San Quentin State Prison, used a gun to take a prison guard hostage and force him to open several cells, according to the Los Angeles Times. Jackson was killed in the ensuing chaos as he and several other inmates attempted to escape from prison. Three guards and two other inmates were also killed. A group of incarcerated people came together to commemorate the death of Jackson and the other prisoners that became known as Black August. August is a month filled with not only other instances of Black resistance, but also happens to be the birth month of Fred Hampton and Marcus Garvey. The March on Washington, Nat Turner's Rebellion, and the Watts Rebellion all took place during August. Participation in celebrating the freedom fighters of the past often come in the form of sun up to sundown fast and other disciplinary practices. This was all news to me.
That's amazing.
Right?
Like, that is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do want to point out 1 year to life.
Bruh.
Essentially meaning, we'll see about it.
Right. Right.
That doesn't even make a sense.
Zero. Zero sense.
$70. Possible life. Basically, you're going to do a lot more than a year.
That's just wild. So
the flip side is knowing now about this Black August.
So I'm definitely feeling like next year we got to put together a whole bunch of programming around Black August. Like, the fact that I'm just now finding out about it is wild. So you know, and you too. So we got to do our part in getting the word out.
Yes. Well, some boats don't float. Sunday was an interesting day all around. It was very humid, started sunny. Somehow I ended up crossing over to Fremont Bridge, watching raindrops dance across the windshield. Blew my mind. Sunday was also the day that the organized Trump boat parade departed from Cathedral Park about 1 p.m.
Oh my God.
Yep, you heard that correctly. The U.S. flag attached to a pickup was replaced with boats adorning Trump Pence signage, and the murky waters of the Willamette became the new highway.
Unbelievable.
Just as the rest of the day had been a little wet and wild, this boat of van, because I don't know what you call a caravan on water, ended up with a boat taking on water and boaters frantically trying to save themselves from sinking.
Stop it.
There is a video of the incident floating around where you can see it from an onlooker's phone capture.
I see what you did there. An incident floating around. I see what you did there. Okay. All right.
Yeah. It appears that no one was injured in this chaos as rescues came to the aid. We're thankful for that because it's never cool for people to get hurt while exercising their First Amendment rights. Correct. Although it's not clear if the sinking boat was a part of the circus parade.
Unbelievable.
Very interesting. Interesting.
You're going to have to send me the link.
Yeah, I'll send you the link. A couple of them joints look like they went and got the boat wrapped in that blue and red that we know so well.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. Must be nice.
This is part of making America great again. Boat of vans. You got to. This is because it's, you know, when it was great before, they used to do boat of vans. So they're bringing them back. Yeah.
They're bringing it back. I wonder if there is a name for a fleet. Would it be considered a fleet if it's just, you know, speedboats? I wonder.
Yeah, I don't think you can give it that much respect. I don't think you can say it. I feel like there needs to be some military formation involved.
I feel that.
Some type of real objectives for you to say fleet.
Okay.
I feel like people will be offended. Those that are actually in fleets will be offended.
Yes. A lot of Keystone Lights. Well, Up next, we got a segment from the locals' interview with Commissioner Hardesty.
Portland has experienced 75 nights of protests in support of Black Lives, demanding reforms to policing and looking to a new vision for public safety. Portland City Council has decreased the police budget and is continuing to explore reforms. Today, we have Commissioner Joanne Hardesty to give us an update on the work of Portland City Council. I'm DJ Ambush with the numbers.
I'm Jeff Smith. Thanks for being here.
Oh, it is absolutely my pleasure. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, gentlemen. Yes, what an interesting 70 plus days in Portland. We're in the midst of, we had four crises, now we're only down to three, right? When we had the federal goons here. And every single night, we still have people taken to the street, saying Black Lives Matter, saying we need to defund the police and invest in community services. When I was here before, I don't know if I mentioned that we got 70,000 emails on defunding the police. 70,000. I mean, I haven't gotten 70,000 emails combined on all the issues that I work on at City Hall. So the magnitude of the community interest is just phenomenal.
How many do you normally get on a given day? How many emails does your office receive?
You know, if I get 10, 20 emails about an issue, it's important, right? Wow. 70,000 emails just totally blows your mind. Now, clearly some land use issues, I'll get a couple of hundred emails, but I've never gotten more than 200 emails about any one topic ever. So just the magnitude of this movement, both nationally and internationally, is pretty phenomenal.
As I can imagine you didn't have a chance to read 70,000 emails, but no. Of the ones that you did have a chance to go through, or your staff had a chance to go through, what was the consensus? What did defunding look like to them?
Defund police or abolish police. The community request was that we defund the police by $50 million. Nice round number. That's what the community wanted. At the end of the day, our combined reduction in Portland Police Bureau's budget was $27 million. And so $5.6 million came from the reduction based on our $75 million deficit because of the downturn in the economy. And the other $15 million came from cutting very strategically out of Portland Police Bureau's budget, the gun violence reduction team, the transit police, and the school resource officers. In addition, taking the $1.6 million that was ongoing money from marijuana tax dollars out of the police budget and reinvesting it in community programs like a Black Youth Leadership Development Program that will start as soon as maybe in the fall, we'll have that started. So a lot of changes have happened in the last 6 weeks that if you'd have asked me 6 months ago if it was humanly possible, I would have laughed and rolled around on the floor going, no way, no shape, no how, right? Certainly not because I didn't think these reforms were necessary and visionary and required for us to have a more just police department. Not because of that, but because I couldn't get two other votes in order to make those changes happen three times prior to this year. So it's not like it was the first time I put those proposals on the table.
Yeah, you had stuff in the queue that was ready to go. And yes, Finally the political moment arose where you could move that stuff from the queue to the front of the line. And I really... And I want to get in deep, if you would, in just a moment, about the independent police review, which just got referred. But before that, I want to pick up on something you said in response to Ambush's question, which was about the gun violence prevention team. A dear family friend of a very dear friend of mine and even ours was Mr. Ford, who got shot, I think, 87th and around Gleason. And just days after that, I think there were 150 bullets flying pretty close to that same intersection. What is your response to critics who try to connect the defunding of the gun violence prevention team and the spate of gun violence?
Right. Well, it's kind of disingenuous to say because we stopped funding the gun violence reduction team on July 1st that all of a sudden everybody who had a weapon decided it was a free-for-all and they could go out and just shoot up any neighborhood they wanted to. No employee of the gun violence reduction team lost their job. They're all gainfully still employed with Portland Police Bureau. What I will tell you is that domestic violence calls have gone up 187% in the last 3 months. What I can tell you is that people are income insecure because people aren't working. People are fearful of being evicted as of October 1st when a moratorium on eviction is lifted. And so there's a lot of anxiety in our community. Portland isn't unique. This is happening in cities all over the country. And whether or not we have a gun violence reduction team has no impact on whether or not the gun violence can be attributed to any one factor. I say a pandemic, economic insecurity, people being stuck in the house for 3+ months together, and the huge increase in domestic violence and child abuse that's taken place in the last 3 months. So
it's one of the most stressful times in American history.
In American history. I mean, no other American has lived through 3 crises in one fell swoop that we're living through right now. And so the anxiety is really high. And then you add on top of that, this global movement around racial justice. And for many folks, right, it, like, life is fine. You know, I'm not prejudiced. I'm not racist. So life is good. Right. But I think there's been this whole new awakening all across the world. That regardless of what we say, and Oregon is really good, Portland is really good at saying it's progressive, but regardless of what we say, if you look at all the social determinants of health, Black people haven't moved in 30 years of record keeping. Neither have Indigenous people, right? Still at the bottom of every social determinant of health, whether it's educational achievement, housing, business ownership, access to green spaces, no matter where you look, right? And that's not by accident. The GI Bill didn't exclude Black GIs by accident. It was intentional, right? And realtors help with that. Zoning codes help with that. So we're living a legacy of Jim Crow, right? And white supremacy laws and systems that were not built for people of color, right? So all of a sudden, the good news is all of a sudden there is both the public awareness and push as well as the political will. I've never had those two in the same place at the same time in my lifetime, right? So here we are at a time where the public is demanding action and not tinkering around the edges. The public is demanding bold, visionary action. And because I've been volunteering around these issues for 30 years, I had a lot of stuff in the queue that was ready to come out and be exposed and build relationships so that it could happen. 6 months ago, it would not have been a 4-0 vote for my ballot measure on community oversight.
If you're willing to share, who are the hardest votes to get?
Well, let me just say that my biggest surprise was Amanda Fritz. Amanda Fritz was on board right away. It was like no question for her. The mayor asked a lot of questions, which you would expect him to do, right? Because he is engaged with police all day, every day, right? So he asked a lot of questions, but I think at the end of the day, everybody knew that we were in a moment that required us to be bold. And honestly, it took just a little investigation to find out if we could do this on this ballot. Because my plan was to move something like this through the charter review process, right? Because I never thought I would have the city council votes to make it happen. So next year we'll have a charter review commission. I thought that'd be a perfect place to have
2021, 2022, sometime down the road.
And it's still going to be in 2021, January 2021, the charter review commission will start. But let me tell you about the ballot measure if you'd like. The ballot measure has 3 main components. The ballot measure will create a truly independent community oversight board to investigate police misconduct. They will have the ability to compel testimony. They will have a budget so that they can do professional investigations with professional staff, and they will be able to implement discipline. In order for this ballot measure to become the community oversight board, there are a couple of other things that have to happen. The legislature has to strengthen the arbitration bill so that once we have this community oversight board, their decisions will be final. The next thing we have to do is again in January, starting to renegotiate the next contract with Portland Police Association. As you know, we paused it because of COVID, but plan to start up again in January. And we also have an independent attorney who will be negotiating for the people of Portland in those contract talks. My experience in 30 years says that the city does not do an effective job when we use internal people to City Hall to negotiate those contracts. So I was able to get my colleagues to support putting $500,000 aside so that we could hire outside legal counsel to lead those negotiations. And so as the community continues to say, right, we need to reimagine what community safety looks like. And in many communities, especially Black and Brown communities, it does not mean a whole lot of people with advanced weaponry yelling demands and commands at them, right? It means a more compassionate and empathetic approach. And honestly, police have one job, and that's to solve crime. They're not social workers. They're not mental health professionals. They are not experts in housing. Even though they'd like us all to believe they could do all of the above, they have one job, and that job is to solve crime. And over the last 20 years, they have gone way, way, way out of their wheelhouse, and the community has suffered the repercussions from that.
If you're just tuning in, that was a segment of the Locals interview with Commissioner Hardesty. The Local is a daily news podcast that you can check out wherever you listen to podcasts and on the X-Ray FM app.
Make sure you all check in with us every Monday at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 8 p.m. as we sit down and run up the numbers.
Run up the numbers.
Arrest Jonathan Mattingly, the cop that killed Breonna Taylor.
Hosted by Ken Jones and DJ Ambush.
Arrest Brett Hankinson, the cop that killed Breonna Taylor.
This episode also features Jefferson Smith and Commissioner Joanne Hardesty.
Arrest Miles Cosgrove, the cop that killed Breonna Taylor.
Special thanks to our researchers and writers, Shireen Hassan, Sham Shawan, Hannah, Alicia, and Joseph Watson.
Arrest the cops that killed Breonna Taylor and make sure they are convicted.
Music by C. Look, we're gonna say this every week until they get arrested. Just know that y'all gonna keep hearing this.
Yes.
Bam.